Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Heath and Tony Talk About. And this night, this Friday in April, Heath and Tony talk about Star Trek. That's right. The magic die have spoken. 20 sides, 20 options, and it landed on the Mighty Trek, which is really great timing because as we're recording this, the final series of Disco is running. A season of Disco is running. I have not started watching it because I don't have Paramount Plus right now. Heath, are you watching it right now?
I am not watching it. I am many seasons behind, but I do have Paramount Plus while it still exists because it apparently lost $1 billion last quarter. So I'm just trying to watch as much Trek as I can. I have been watching DS9, which I will go to my grave as saying is might be my favorite show of all time and is my favorite Star Trek.
It's definitely my favorite Trek. It's, I mean, Buffy is still there, but I mean, like, We'll get into that. So let's begin. Let's go way back. So like I'm here on record. I'm recording this for the internet to hear. I was a Star Wars is my earliest memory, seeing Star Wars in the theater at the drive-in, not in the theater, but at the drive-in with Noom. And I'm a Star Wars guy, Star Wars. And I never was the Trek hater. I was just like, it's fine. And as an adult, I'm here to say on a recording to the universe, Star Trek is better. I will turn it to you, my young Trekkie. Tell me all about how that, why you knew that when we were children and it took me until I was 50 to understand.
Well, I grew up in a Star Trek household. My dad watched it when it was first run. And I would watch, I think it was on 32 in Chicago. If anybody from Chicago remembers Channel 32 on UHF when we had two dials.
Where the White Sox played.
Yeah, so he watched the White Sox, too, and I never liked the White Sox because we're Cubby fans, both of us. Like, you don't watch the White Sox. You're like, oh, they're playing at night? Fuck's this. Anyway, because the Cubs didn't have lights until, what, the 90s?
Late 80s. No, more recently than that. It's been in this century.
That's right. Anyway, so you had to go, yeah. So 32 was like the old original series reruns, and then 79... the motion picture came out. I remember having getting McDonald's Happy Meals that had these little like punch out of the ships, those little paper punch out things used to make. And it was always a thing in the household. We always went to all the movies, but it wound up being like every other one that I've seen in the theater. But that's kind of one of those weird things.
Did you have get this stuck too? With all the bad ones? You saw the odd numbered ones in the theaters because the odd ones are the bad ones. You missed all the good ones.
That's another. I have a controversial take on.
Okay, let's hear it. I'm ready overall, for all of it. But, yeah.
But so it was just I don't remember a time when I wasn't watching it because I just watched it from when I was just a little kid. And I do remember the theme song and the which is a theme song of Next Generation of the motion picture, where my dad would play the vinyl, and he had this big old like Heathkit was a company in St. Joe that used to make. Like build it yourself shit at home. I don't know why. Electronics at home. And he had these gigantic speakers, which we actually had in our apartment and that probably the same record player. And I remember him just blaring that. And so that was like, I was always a Trekkie. And then when Next Gen came out, like my dad was a football coach. So we would have these long Fridays. When I was in high school, it was even longer because I worked at like 5 a.m. on Fridays, which is just nuts. And because I stopped, I worked at a grocery store.
Harding, and then went to go. Then had to go to high school.
I went to school, and then went to a football game, and then so it was like by the time everything got, and my dad would have to call like the Herald Palladium, the newspaper in Berrien County, and give the scores. So like who scored what, how many tackles you had or whatnot, and then we would watch Next Gen because it was we had cable and everything, but it was only syndicated, so we had to watch it at like 2 a.m. Right. So that was like my, and then my freshman year of college, I went out to Eastern, and I was I'm by myself for the first time in my life, you know, and it's like, I turn on the TV and I get like, you know, one channel and it's like little ass TV, but like every night they played original series and next gen reruns. So they would play them back to back. So I had 2 hours of Star Trek every night. And then they would play the new next gen episodes because it was still on its first run. So that was when, and then Playmates came out with the toys. So it was like that Christmas was like, I remember getting like the Geordi without the visor. So it was like, that's when I personally think I went to another level, leveled up as far as a Trekkie. And that was like, you know, and since then, because that January is when Deep Space Nine came out. And, you know, and we saw changed. All the movies. I remember going to Disney World because my folks were Disney adults before it was even a term. And
that is true. I can witness.
We went to
witness that. Holy shit!
We went to Disney World, and I remember going alone to see Star Trek VI, like in one of the biggest. Like they didn't have multiplexes at that time. You had to go to like Vegas or LA or big cities. But where we were from, you know, you didn't have that. You had like you know, those little shitty, like cheap movie theaters with the walls are peeling and shit. But, you know, I remember seeing Star Trek VI, and it was just wild. So, yeah, and then I guess my take is that it is better than Star Wars because you can grow. I mean, I grew up with Star Trek, and you can grow with Star Trek. Star Trek is going to give you the Abrams movies, which are more Star Wars and action, or they're going to give you Measure of the Man, which is going to, you know, an episode of Next Generation, which is going to give you like what it is to be human. Is Data human? Like they're not afraid of issues. They're not afraid of, you know, being progressive, even in a time when nothing is progressive. You know, being progressive is almost, you know, it's woke culture or whatever. I hope that term, you know, becomes an antiquated term one day. But yeah, so it was just always in my DNA. And but I had this quote from Leonard Nimoy from Reuters from May 5th, 2009. He said, canon is only important to certain people because they have to cling to their knowledge of the minutiae. Open your mind, be a Star Trek fan, and open your mind and say, where does Star Trek want to take me now? So that's kind of like what I think about.
I love that.
That's kind of like repairing my broken fandom. You know, it's like Sam Witwer. I saw a clip where he was talking about doing Darth Maul's voice just to talk for a book. And he's like, well, this isn't like the Darth Maul stuff we did in the show. He's talking to Dave Filoni about this. And Filoni's like, look, it's different campfires. These are tall tales. That's what Star Wars is. It's like, you know, it's like you go to this campfire and you tell this tale about Darth Maul. And then maybe over in this campfire, they're telling a different version of that. That's where you can, you know, it doesn't all have to make sense. And I think, you know, from us coming from comics, it all had to make sense in some kind of continuity. And then now it's like, and then they had shit like The Simpsons, where nothing makes sense in The Simpsons. It's been going on for 40 years, you know. Lisa Simpson should be a great grandmother or something. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter because it's like, what are you going to get out of it? And that's the thing is like, if you're 12 and you're watching Rey, if you're 12-year-old, you know, watching Rey and Star Wars, you should be inspired by it. If you're not, then Disney's doing something wrong. But it's, again, it's like Star Wars is always there for us to give us hope. It's like, it's not about the lightsabers. It's not about melodrama, good versus evil, or this person turning. It's like complicated relationships. And as the shows have gone on, I think that we're getting that more and more and more. And it's why, you know, and then there's Strange New Worlds, which is just blowing everything away, because Strange New Worlds is like the culmination of everything. It's the syndication of Deep Space Nine, and it's that original series feel, and it's just like, it's like that greatest hits album. You know, it's like, you know, it's the one where you say, hey, I don't like Star Trek. You're like, here, watch this. You could watch the Abrams films, or you could watch, you know, Strange New Worlds, and it's like, and that's how I feel. It's like it's like Hush. Like people say, oh, I don't want. Where do I read Batman? It's like you give them Hush because it's Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee. You've got all the villains that Batman's ever faced. You could watch, you know, just I was watching the pilot of Strange New Worlds, and I had seen, you know, Pike's character in Discovery, and I'm like, this is completely different. And then plus, it's got Melanie Scarfino, who's Winona, and from Winona in it, and it's just, there's something about Anson Mount is that he has that Shatner caliber to him.
He knows what he's doing. He so respects the camp.
But that's the thing, is like, in this time that we're in, where we're just recovering or still in trauma, if you're in some kind of trauma, like, Star Trek's like walking right along with you as far as some of the traumas that have gone by. You look at, go back to DS9, you look at Kira, who's also sort, you know, was a freedom fighter in the war. I mean, she's my favorite character in that show amongst all, you know, I love all the characters, but even when I was originally watching it, it was like, there's just something so, you know, relatable, and there's always something that you can watch that will fit your mood. If you want to watch something a little more, you know, ridiculous, you could watch Trouble with Tribbles, or, you know, and there's a lot I haven't seen. I mean, there's probably 200 episodes at least that I haven't seen of Star Trek. As I mean, I haven't seen, I've seen bits of Enterprise. I've seen, I haven't seen all of Deep Space Nine. I haven't seen, I've been, I was kind of rewatching Next Gen and watching DS9. So, but rewatching DS9, like, there's a really, really good, documentary. I want to say it's called Trouble on the Bridge. I think that's what it is. It's narrated or hosted by Shatner, but it's who's a whole nother topic.
That's gotta be fun. Yeah, yeah.
Who talks about the first two seasons of the Next Generation and how they just went through writers and producers. It was just a mess. But then by the time you get to season three, that's when you get you know, the Picard becoming Locutus, and then it just, like, the season finale of, I think it's three, when Riker says to fire on the Borg cube, it's like one of the greatest TV moments of all time. And that's not even counting, like, Yesterday's Enterprise. I mean, I remember seeing Yesterday's Enterprise, where you literally, like, time changes, you know, it's one of the best time travel stories. It's, yeah. So anyway, I'm going on and on. I could go on.
No, go. Just, I'm here. I'm here for it.
But that's what the thing is, like, that, like, as Star Wars gets TV shows, I mean, I think the one that's the most Star Trek-ish is Andor, because it's kind of like,
so good. Yeah.
Andor is like, well, this is what a normal bloke in the world of Star Wars is like. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if that works. Like, there's been certain times when I've been watching, like, Ahsoka, and I go, I was watching Ahsoka, and I literally went, this isn't Star Wars. What is this? Like, it just realization. So I turned it on, like, a rando, I've been watching, like, season three of Picard, like, this rando episode, and then Ensign Rose on there, and it's like, Michelle Forbes is on there, and it's this Michelle Forbes, and those characters haven't been on screen since she, spoilers from the 90s, since she betrayed the crew. So Picard was like bringing her up as a protege, and she got together with the Marquis and just betrayed everybody. And then she gets back into Starfleet, but it's like this. See, that's the thing, is that Picard season three is all the, it's like everybody talks about fan service and yada, 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 nostalgia porn or whatever, but it's paying off all this shit we never got. So Nemesis was that movie that was supposed to, they almost killed the franchise. It was the Batman and Robin of Star Trek. And Abrams, to his credit, you know, put the panels to it and said, here, I'm going to give you a completely different experience with a lot of, like, lens flare. And, but no, it's like,
I hate Nemesis.
Huh?
I don't hate Nemesis. I mean, I've not seen it in a long time.
It's better than five, I'll say that. It's better than five.
Well, and that's the thing. Even Shatner says that he's always, like, sad. He's like, I directed the worst Star Trek movie. He admits that.
I read his book on Star Trek memories, and it's on the movie memories, and he basically ran out of money. It's what happened. They just kept changing the budget on him, but I don't think he really knew how to do it. But anyway, that's a whole, we could have a whole podcast just on that.
I just got Shatner. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's Star Wars podcasts I've listened to where they talk about the dark times, and that's, you know, from 1983 to 99 when we had no Star Wars except for the books, and you know, that's where Timothy Zahn really Star Wars alive, and is saying that like Next Gen, that was what was keeping like science fiction alive, like in a lot of cases Next Gen, you know, it was that. You know, you didn't have Star Wars. You had the Next Generation.
Well, what Star Trek does right, and then what I think the new series are doing incorrectly, not in the budget or not. I mean, I think Disco's brilliant. I'm really excited for Section 31. I think Stranger Worlds is fucking amazing. But when they bring it back, so like again, I was aware of the Trek, of the shows they were just on, like. The animated series was on too. So it was like, I never sat and watched anything in a row. It wasn't until very recently that I actually watched the original three seasons of the original series in a row. And those were longer seasons back then too. They'd be like 29, 30 episodes. And the only reason the show made it is because Lucille Ball said, I want a fucking hit. She sat in the room and said out loud, George Takei has said this, that she made it go. She said out loud, I want a fucking hit. And they're like, you got it, boss. And so that is also why my favorite thing about Star Trek is why sometimes you're like, why are they all dressed like gangsters? And it's because on the Desilu set that week, the week before, they were shooting something and they had the gangster things. So like, I guess, so Roddenberry's like, shit, hurry up, write something for gangsters. And they would just write that episode. But the show was brilliant. Carrie Brenning's her maiden name. She's been married for years. Sorry, Jimmy. I always still say Carrie. She's a hardcore Trekkie. And, but she always says that, you know, Shatner is like, he is the perfect embodiment of camp. Like he's high camp. And I agree. He knows what he's doing. It's spectacular. But so I grow up watching those shows, right? They're on everywhere. They're on Channel 32 in reruns, or on WGN, Channel 9 in reruns, whatever, Channel 16 out of, you know, because I wasn't a sleeper. So it'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning, WNDU. Oh, look, what's on? Star Trek. So I watched it just whatever. And then the cartoons I found fascinating because it was like their voices. And it was like, what the fuck's happening? And, So when they originally bring it out as the syndicated, and for people who don't know what that is, it's free TV. And now this is coming back, like Tubi, Roku TV. There's a few other channels that are starting. These are called FAST, free ad service TV. I don't know what the hell the S stands for, but essentially, like Freevee is one of these. Like Freevee's got some amazing shows. Like I don't know if you've watched Freevee, but like. High school, the Tegan and Sarah show is goddamn awesome. I love that. The They're Alex awesome. Rider show, it's really great. So there's like, and this is just free shit they're giving away. Ava Mendez has a show on there. It's that she directs and writes. It's amazing. Like there's some good, so like this free over the top TV with ads, ad based stuff. So when these came out in syndication, like CBS could have picked them up because CBS Paramount has always owned Star Trek. But instead of like saying, well, we're going to put it on primetime, we're just like, let's just put it out and see what happens. So when Next Gen comes out, it's fucking free. And like you said, for you, it was 2 a.m. And when we were in Albion, it and DSN was still on, it was on, like we could catch it like in one of the Lansing channels with our, you know, in with our rabbit ears at like on a Sunday at like 2 p.m. That's when DSN was on. But then, you know, Enterprise was on a different channel at a different time.
Yeah.
So the reason it was popular is because it was fucking free. And so what else happened during that time? Xena happened. Jack of all, Bruce Campbell. Oh, my God. The Hercules, all those shows. Like there's like Highlander, the series came out in the 90s. Yeah. It was free. It was syndicated. It wasn't on a network. So what I think the new Trek is doing wrong, and I know they're getting a bigger budget, but they're putting it behind the paywall. And during the pandemic, when they didn't have any choice but to show Disco on CBS, and then during the writer's strike, like other networks are like, oh shit, we got to show something. So they started showing these behind the pay. And the ratings are through the fucking roof. So to me, if you want to put it on Paramount Plus for the first season, but then when season two comes out, put season one on free TV, either syndicate it or put it on CBS. People can watch it for free over the top. And I think like you talked about, it's like you're punishing people for being Star Trek fans. The reason you were such a Trekkie and the reason that it became such a thing is because you gave it to the people. And this is the thing. So I'm getting to the end of my thing. Star Trek is for the people. Like you said, not only does it show you to grow up, but it's a little like, remember Roadside Prophets with Yauk and John Doe and Cusack?
Oh, I didn't see that again.
Or not Yauk. It's not Yauk. It's Horowitz. It's Ad-Rock.
Yeah.
And Cusack's character, he plays a band, like people, this is a Casper. Real movie. It's called Roadside Prophets. Yeah. Roadside Prophets. And in it, Cusack, he goes in and he eats all the food. He orders everything on the menu. He goes, food for the people. And he just dines and dashes. And the people in the movie seem to think that Ad-Rock and John Cusack look enough alike that Ad-Rock, they think he's him. That is not true. Timothy Leary shows up. It's a fucking bananas movie. But it was for the people, right? It was like TV for the people. It was art for the people. Star Trek is always the thing that you didn't have to pay for. You had to go pay to see Star Wars. You had to buy the books. Star Trek was just like on. If you had a TV and a fucking coat hanger, you could get it. So it's like science fiction. It's thinking man science fiction, without a doubt. But it's also like, because it's so character driven, you could find a character that you could relate to. Everybody came from something. Right. So whether it's like you're a smart, nerdy kid. So you like, you know, you're like, oh, I'm all in on Next Gen because they've got a smart, nerdy kid on there. But like whatever it is, there's somebody like Cole Meany on DSN. You know, I love Cole Meany, too. But he's also like plays Cole Meany. He's a working class guy who's worked his way up to this. Like, so I think that they're missing out by like making the new Star Trek be an elitist thing that you got to pay to get it, like fucking Star Trek for the people. And I think it's gonna
change, because that you're touching on something that saved the show. So Star Trek started in 66, was canceled in 69.
Yeah.
And like it was supposed to be canceled after season one, but fans wrote in for two more seasons. So it was that first time that a show was saved from cancellation, but then, you know, like the fandoms started, excuse me, right away because of just what nerve it was hitting. This dumpy little show about basically a wagon train in space.
Yeah.
Starts fandom. Like there wasn't, I mean, you could argue and say, well, the Sherlock Holmes fans are like, hold my beer, because they brought Sherlock Holmes back by just when Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes. But that's, you know, 70 years before. Like, Star Trek created modern fandom by not letting the show go. And, like, there's conventions I've seen where, like, you know, the stars will always be grateful for the fans because they saved the show. Like, they have careers because Star Trek fans wouldn't let it go. So there is that. But what's happened, and like it's almost like the well's been poisoned in fandom, again going with my broken fandom, is because
I love it. Bring it.
We have this onslaught of content, and now it doesn't mean anything. Like I hate going to the movies and not being freaked out or scared in a horror film. I hate just mediocre content, and it's like the studios are like, haha, and I don't even know what's gonna happen now post strike, because we're gonna have a different wave of shit. But it's like, you know, you just because you have a superhero movie doesn't mean it's going to make $1 billion. Like the business models are changing so fast post pandemic, like, you know, but at the end of the day, you have these, like Star Trek can show you how a fandom can be run if you really start looking at some of the stories. Like Nana Visitor's got a book coming out in October, where she interviews astronauts, politicians, people in conventions, men, women. It's all about women in Star Trek and, you know, everybody's journey. And there's a really good documentary on Nichelle Nichols about how she helped get Sally Ride up into space as an astronaut. Like, Trek can be used to make real changes. And you can't say that about, you know, Star Wars, even though they're projecting their shit on the side of the Empire State Building. Like, that's space fantasy. It's always been considered that. And there was never more of a division now. Even back in the day, I just liked both. I knew that I could get Star Wars action figures, and the Star Trek action figures were these little pewter figures or something. So when you have like 500 action figures come out and you start, you know, it's weird. It's just like I've never like bought a costume or any of that stuff, but I've always been a Trekkie. It's just like, I don't know. I think it's just because there's so much to draw from. Whereas Star Wars, it's like, that is pure nostalgia porn. That's pure, like, this is how I felt when I was 6. I want that feeling again, you know? Oh, and now it's like another generation's going, well, this is not like the prequels. I want that feeling. And it's like, I don't watch something Star Trek and go, that's not Star Trek. Like, I mean, we talk about the books. Like, Peter David has probably written some of the best books. I will argue that Michael Jan Friedman, who also wrote the Next Generation comics, has written some of the best. Like, he went back and, like, he did a book called Reunion, which I remember buying the abridged cassette tape of, because I'm old, of the audio book that Gates McFadden had narrated, and it was great. And then I recently, the last couple of years, read the actual book, and it's the Stargazer 1. Like, the Stargazer is back in Picard as a different ship, because, you know, they just rename a ship or whatnot. But it talks about his crew, it talks about Wesley's dad, and Michael Jan Friedman did like 4 or 5 novels just of those. And that's, Star Trek's probably the only TV show I can read the novels and I go, okay, this fits here. Which brings up another thing about continuity. They call it like the beta continuity, where it's never referred in the movies or the shows. They've adapted TV episodes, but they've never, like I'm reading QAnon, which is basically it's a really short Peter David book. It's really cool. It's like Luxwana Troy, Deanna's mom, starts dating Q, and it's just like, what happens there? It's just two strong personalities, and it's just brilliant. And I guess Majel Barrett, who played Luxwana, and was Gene Roddenberry's widow, worked with Peter for years to try to get it made as a TV show. But there have been novelists who have gone on and worked on the shows or written episodes, but it didn't get reciprocated. So there's a really good story of like Peter David. He did a Sulu book. Nice. He knew George. He knows George Takei, and he was at his wedding and stuff. And there is a bit in Star Trek 5 or 6 where he says his name. I can't remember it. Hidura Sulu or whatever. His whole first name. He never had his full name ever mentioned in any of the shows or any of the movies.
But Peter David made it up. But
that was Peter David, like, had fleshed it out. So they're watching it, and then all of a sudden you hear, you know, Peter David give like a cheer in the middle of the premiere, because he goes to the premiere, because he's like, if they say it in the show, then it's canon. That's right. How canon works in Star Trek. But then, like, I play the Star Trek online game, which is the only MMORPG I play, but it's got all the voice actors in it. And there's like mirror episodes where, like, you got the mirror version of Tilly, and you've got, you know, everybody comes back for that. It's great. But
I love Tilly, by the way. Tilly's my favorite Tilly's disco. Great. Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's just everything kind of just reinforces it, whether it's the comics or, you know, that it's always Star Trek. It's never like, well, what is this? And when you start questioning what it is, you go, well, it's like you've got this strong, really good, I'm sound like a lush, but you have a really nice fine whiskey, right? And then you have it, well, let's water it down and water it down and water it down. I'm like, when is it water and when is it whiskey? Like, what,
right?
What potency does Star Wars have when you have, well, we're gonna tell you every minute that ever happened in Anakin's life. You know, for George to say, and I hate to bring up Star Wars and the Star Trek, but it's like they're coming to a head in as far as like what people want out of their science fiction. Like when I take my wife to see Star Wars, she's always like, oh, that's the same movie, and she's got a point. And that's the worst thing about fandom and being part of fandom and being like overrun with fandom and letting it, you know, is you have strength in numbers, but you want the same thing. listening to Tad Williams, the science fiction fantasy author. He's talking about epic fantasy and how epic fantasy readers expect a certain thing, but you can't give it to them in the same way. And I've known people who are like reading the book after book after book of epic fantasies, and it's what they want. They want this hero's journey, and they want the same story over and over and over. But at a certain point, they've heard, they've gone like, well, have I read this before? Like, they don't even know after a while.
Right. Well,
and I think that's what you're getting with Star Wars. And then Star Trek comes in and goes, we have this history, and, you know, it's wibbly wobbly, you know, but it can plug you into, you're not just there for the melodrama. You're not just there for the lightsaber battles. You're not just there for the flash. You're there for the, how it relates to you, what you can draw from it. When you have TV that you can draw from, if I can watch, you know, Buffy and go, oh my God, like, or you learn something, or you watch something again and go, oh, well, I got more out of that than I did when I was 12. Like,
yes,
I remember like unconsolably crying, like when I was a kid, in like two different instances. One was after seeing the complete Beatles, like we talked about in our Beatles episode.
Yeah.
That I was like, I can't believe John Lennon's dead, and they're, you know, just that was all over. It was the magnitude of them. It really affected me as a kid. And the other was Star Trek II, when Spock dies. Like,
oh my God, brutal.
I remember just like the trying to hold back tears. And every time I see it, I can't. And possibly the best thing I've ever seen Shatner do in his entire career is the speech he does at his eulogy before they send Spock's body out to the Genesis planet, and that really, like, so when Star Trek 3 came out, that's one of my favorite movie memories, just seeing that. But then seeing like the end of that movie, there's always something in there that was just turned everything upside down. It's like tips the tables on the whole concepts, almost like Spock coming back and then, you know, really being changed by it. And you don't see the ramifications to that until you get into the next gen episodes where he's trying to reunite the Vulcans and the Romulans. Like, but seeing the self-destruct and they blow up the Enterprise, and there's a scene where they're all the original crew on the planet, and the Enterprise is just burning into orbit. And it's just one of those scenes that's just, I just remember it as a kid. I think I was crying during that. I mean, I was a sensitive child, but still
It was another reason why we're friends. Yes.
These didn't, you know, these stories weren't throwaway things. These were people I grew up with. It's like, you know, talking to friends of mine who had horrible childhoods, and they gleam onto like, well, I learned more about what's right and wrong from Star Wars. I'm like, well, that's fine. And I know you referenced Denny O'Neill, and Denny did a lot.
Always. Yeah.
For that, but a lot of it was, you know, like the stuff I watched in Star Trek, the questions that are brought up, you know, and it's, you know, it instilled like a love of science fiction that I still have. Like, it's
philosophical science fiction too, because remember Heinlein wrote some, right? I mean, they like didn't fuck around. Like, Roddenberry got writers. Like, he got science.
I think Heinlein wrote it, but he had
Heinlein wrote some, didn't he?
I don't think so. Yeah, Harlan Ellison famously wrote shit, it's like one of the most famous episodes. City on the Edge of Forever. He wrote City on the Edge of Forever, but he, to his dying day, Harlan said that Gene fucked it up. Because there was supposed to be a side subplot on the ship where there was like a drug epidemic in the Enterprise. And I guess that was all cut out. But that's Joan Collins. And that's probably the best original series episode, hands down. I mean, there's some others I like, you know, but that one's crazy.
Well, but there's the thing about it is you're asking readers, you're asking viewers to chew on their entertainment. And I think I just wrote an essay about this, just something short, about the idea of like, my books, and this is what got me thinking. I read, Percival Everett's new book, James, which is a retelling of Huck Finn from Jim's perspective. And it is glorious. And it just started to just get me thinking about, like, can retelling be literary criticism? Can a cover song, I'm going to say one of your favorites, Tori's version of spoiler alert for the essay that is already out, that because it's going to be my newsletter by the time this comes out, everybody who's subscribed to my newsletter has already read it, is my argument that Tori Amos's version of Smells Like Teen Spirit is better. It's a better song because she's commenting on Nirvana and the grunge thing with the way that she chooses to turn it into a ballad, and she's Tori Amos and she's a witch and she's magic and she terrifies me, but I also love her. So using art as criticism that can be multiple things, it can be fun, but it can also say something. And when you're redoing it, when you're reimagining it, and the Star Trek films and then Next Generation and Voyager and DSN and now the new shows, they're an Enterprise, even Enterprise, right? Enterprise is commenting on the thing before, because you stick Enterprise as a prequel series. It's a really good show. I've not seen all of it. But you're commenting on the thing. So it's not like you're just living in the fandom. You're commenting on the thing, because Star Trek was just fun entertainment. If you just want to watch Star Trek and shut your mind off, you can. But Roddenberry's asking you to think about stuff. He's asking you silently to think about stuff. Like, they were so afraid about having this multi, racial cast. And he was like, I didn't care. This is what the world looked like. This is a utopia. So they don't have to say this is a utopia. They just show it to you on the screen. They're like,
That's the whole point of it. That's brilliant. Thing.
Yeah.
If you watch Star Wars and you say, okay,
it's a lot of white people.
Kylo Ren's here. Yeah, poor John Boyega. Like my theory. I'll save that for the Star Wars.
Yeah. We've got Star Wars is on the list, so
we have to do it like three parts.
Justice for Finn is what we'll call it. Yeah.
I'll tell you my theory that I wanted to have happen in Episode 3, and then No, it's just it is. It's like Nichelle Nichols was gonna quit. She was Uhura in the original
series.
Amazing. She was going to quit. And Martin Luther King called her up and said, you had to stay on. And she's like, who's going to say no to Martin Luther King? And she's like, why? He's like, because you are showing that we're there. You're showing that African-American people are there in the future. And that's what Whoopi said. Like, Whoopi loved it because Whoopi's like, look, we're there, man. And she was guiding. Like, we're there in the future. You have Russians in the middle of a Cold War. A Russian's a part of the crew. He's not like cleaning the toilet. He's not a red shirt. He's Chekhov. He's one of the one of my favorite characters. Probably and Anton Yelchin. Oh, rest in peace. Played him so brilliantly in Abrams still.
Yeah.
Like if I would say like if you don't like Star Trek or you've never experienced it, I'd say watch Star Trek Beyond. Don't watch the first one. You could. It's got Bruce Greenwood in it. One of the greatest actors of all time playing Pike.
He does a great Pike. Yeah.
But Star Trek Beyond is like the biggest souped up episode. That's what I thought about Insurrection.
When
they did that Next Gen movie, it's like, oh, I just saw a big ass, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Didn't Frakes direct that one? Was that a Frakes?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But or you show them First Contact, because First Contact is. First Contact 6 and 2 are probably the best three, but Beyond is the best of the Abrams.
That's the one that Simon wrote? Did he write Beyond?
I think so, yeah.
He definitely had a lot of fun with that one.
I need to go back and watch 2 Into Darkness because I wasn't a Cumberbatch then. Sherlock, we need to put Sherlock on the list. Have you seen Sherlock?
I have, of course. Yeah, we watched it in real time.
You got to put that on our list because that. Oh my God. Like, that's so good.
Okay.
I didn't want to see it because I'm such a Sherlockian. I was like, no, what's this modern day shit? And then I saw it and I was like, oh my God, that might be one of the greatest things I've ever
so
seen.
So good. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I see. Here's the thing, though, and this is again to bring up Carrie again, who is a big Trekkie. She doesn't necessarily like the Kelvin ones because she doesn't want too much Star Wars in her Star Trek. And it is true that the Kelvin verse is a little more Star Warsian than Star Trekkie, and there's no doubt about that. But I do think But again, if it gets people interested, this is it. When I'm gonna say. Most of the time, the book is better than the movie. I just was on, this isn't out yet, or it may be by the time this comes out. I was just on an episode of The Night Shift with Kyle, and we did The Shining. And we spoiler alert for that show, shit all over Kubrick's movie, because the book is A, just so much better, and B, the movie doesn't make sense.
It's the miniseries, the miniseries of The Shining, though, is awesome. It's awesome. Stephen Weber, Rebecca De Mornay.
Yeah.
Oh. And King wrote the screenplay for that.
He did write the screenplay for that. But what I would say is, didn't mean to take us down. We should probably put Stephen King on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about, because he comes up almost every episode that we do. Yeah. But anyway, what I would say is, like, I'm always the person who says, you know, the book is better than the movie, whatever. And almost always, except for like Die Hard and Fight Club and The Commitments, the movies are better. But
Godfather.
I don't know. I'm agnostic about The Godfather. Jaws, for sure, the movie's better. But what I would say is, an adaptation, I don't shit on it anymore, because what I realize is, oh, the adaptation happens, and then people go read the source material, and then they have a conversation and can say, oh, I like the book better. And one of my favorite podcasts, Cover to Credits, is a couple. He's a graphic designer, she's a librarian. They read books, they watch the adaptation, then they talk about it, and it's delightful. Cover to Credits, they're great people. It's a great show. You would love it. It'd be something great for you to listen to. They're a lot of fun. They put out a couple hundred. I did get them to do Edge of Tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, fantastic. So, which again, the book is great too, but the movie's fun. So anyway, what I would say is, if you watch Beyond or you watch the Kelvinverse, then that adaptation is, which again, adaptation is literary criticism. The Kelvinverse is commenting on the original series. Clearly, they even have, you know, Spock Prime in there. It's a love letter to it while commenting on it. So yes, it is a little more hyped up than the originals, but then that makes you want to go watch the originals. Even if you don't watch the original series, even if watching Kelvin makes you just go watch the original, was it 9? Did they get 9 original, or is there 10 Star Trek movies?
There's 10. No, original got
6. 6, but I'm saying with Next Gen. Next Gen got 4.
With Next Gen, what do you count 4, First Contact? And then Generations is both of them.
Oh, Generations is both of them. That's right. Okay, yeah. So you've got 6, Generations, and then, okay. So if watching those 3 makes you go back and watch those 10 movies, and then maybe, so it's like having that adaptation, having that conversation about it, like, I'm okay with it. And if in 20 years somebody wants to do another one, and I know they keep talking about Star Trek 4, everybody's busy. It sucks without Anton. I don't know that you could replace him, so they'd have to kill.
I think they're doing a prequel off screen. Movie was the last news I heard.
A prequel
in the Kelvin first, yeah.
But with different actors then.
Yeah. Tarantino's would have been fucking awesome.
I know he wanted to do that so desperately. So, but what I would just say is, like, I did like Beyond a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, wait. I have a question about continuity.
Yeah.
I thought Disco was the prequel to the Kelvin universe. And I thought that was the case until Picard came along. Am I wrong in that? Like, I haven't really dug deep into the research, but I was like, okay, this is the Kelvin universe because of the way that Disco looked. And then,
well, Disco,
did it change? Because they're 900 years in the future. I know that now.
Well, Disco, but, I don't want to spoil because it's still happening, and I haven't watched the last season. But Disco opens up the possibility of how the Kelvin universe exists. And that's all I will say. Okay. So it is a prequel to the Kelvin universe. It doesn't necessarily, because
we got on season 2 and Melissa and I hit a wall, because it was like, we love Jason Isaacs so much in season 1.
He's amazing,
like,
right?
Without him, it's like, but no, I even if I'm watching it by myself, I'll have to, because what's his name who played Manchester Black in Supergirl comes in. A black actor. I can't remember his name.
Oh, he's in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, he's awesome. Great. He was Manchester Black on Supergirl. And just,
I quit watching Supergirl. Sorry.
What season did you go to?
Two?
One?
Well, no. I made it through John showing up. I think so. What is that, season 4?
Yeah, I think Manchester Black came in after that. It went 6. Okay. I still haven't watched all of them. I haven't watched 6 because the pandemic just obliterated that show.
Yeah. But what I would say is, I think you should, I mean, it's,
but I'm, here's my question.
Just, so I don't want to say anything. I was just going to say, I was going to.
So if you become more of a Star Trek fan, does it made you want to watch everything, or are you still like, well, I like this bits of it, and I don't know about. I mean, how, if you like it more than Star Wars, then and you've seen Andor, are you ready to dig into it? But you're not digging into it. You know.
I'm into it. Oh yeah, I don't know. My goal is to watch everything. David Ajala plays Booker.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about. Yeah. He's amazing. I like him as Booker. Awesome. So I would say I want to watch everything. I haven't yet. I am again frustrated that it's behind a paywall. Here's the thing that is annoying. Like S stands for supported, free ad supported TV. What the fuck? I'm like, what does S stand for? I'm a fucking idiot. So the thing is, I started watching. So I'm just gonna. I started rewatching the Highlander series because I never watched all the Highlander series in a row and in order. And I'm having a good time with that. I took a little break. I had some traveling to do. I sit down to pick up where I am, and I'm right at the beginning of season 6, and it's gone. It's not on Tubi anymore. It's not on Roku anymore. Oh. Some other network called Cine something, whatever, bought it, and it's like, so now it's on this Midnight Pulp service, which you can pay for as a Prime add-on, or it's currently free on this other new fast service. What's it called? It's called Cineverse, and it used to be called Cinedine, now it's Cineverse. And Cinedine owned all the Highlander shows, and I understand why they're doing it, because the Highlander movie's coming out, and so Highlander's getting, so they're like trying to get you to pay for it. But it's like, how many people every day were sitting down and just watching Highlander? You're watching your stupid fucking ads for whatever it is. And so it's like, I personally believe you make more money on the ad. So that's part of my problem with keeping up with the Trek. Now there's a show, there's a free service. It's like with your antenna, you know how like there's digital channels once they went digital. So it's like,
yeah,
it's called Heroes and Icons. And I don't know if it's a streaming service, Heroes and Icons, but it's live TV, air quotes, live TV. But every night from like 8 to midnight or 7 to midnight weekdays, they play Trek. So they play one OG, one next gen, one DSN, one Voyager, one Enterprise. Every night for 5 hours, there's a random Trek on. And so that's cool. And each of those are kind of playing in order. But again, I don't sit down every night at 9 o'clock and be like, Deep Space Nine is on. I could and I should. But part of me is like, I don't want to have to pay to watch it. And again, years ago, it was just on all of these.
Well, we had to find the DVDs, or then they went back and remastered the original series. Like,
yeah.
Like Melissa and I were talking about that, like how hard it was to find a live album by, you know, Michael Penn or somebody, you know, like you.
Oh my God.
Or we'd find bootlegs, or we would just scour. It's like, God, I think this is why I'm like getting out of superhero comics, is the fact that I don't have a pull file. I don't have, I buy some digital comics, and I'm pulling away from it because there's just too much, and I'm not that, you know, I'm not a hoarder.
Like, yeah.
The great Michael Bailey, who I reference all the time, who does like the best Superman podcast and podcasting since like 2009. He was like, yeah, I guess I just realized, you know, I don't want to be a hoarder anymore. And the people are just selling all these guys, like you sold your collection years ago. And
I did.
Like, wow. And then I've done that. You know, I have like literally 10 comics in the box. Like I have hundreds on digitally, like, but it's also novels, and it's, you know, it's, so it's this whole, like, we used to go, like you and I would go on a road trip. We'd go to Kalamazoo. We might have $100, just, you know, a few money in our pockets, and fuck, we usually it was $40. So if I had $40,
$100, like, we must have had a really good week at our shitty job.
I remember
Don Ganser gave me a bonus.
I remember Chalmers. Chalmers spent like $96 at like one of the comics, just buying, like, he was buying all the Titans. So he bought like $96 of comics in 1992, you know, of the Titans. And $96 will get you like 20 comics these days. It was like 100 comics, you know, and it was just easy. Like,
oh God, because he would go through the quarter bins. Remember, the quarter bins were a thing. So God, if you had $100, you could walk away with 1,000 comics.
Well, that's what we did. And like the first con we went to, when, you know, Sharon Cyril took you and me and Chalmers to Chicago Comic Con, like 1990-91. Like,
I drove. I was on the blue line going past the Rosemont Center just the other day, and I was like, "Hey."
Yeah, and I was like carrying just bags of comics, because you could. I mean, I remember like getting like Frank Miller's Elektra stuff for like $2 or something, like, and just there were like 50 booths of quarter bins. You'd spend most of your
sometimes
day there.
You get sometimes you get like a whole box, right? That's what I'm saying. So like last for $100, you could sometimes be like, I'll sell you this whole box for like $5. And you're like, there's 100 comics in there for $5.
Last comic I went to was Motor City Con in like 2019 or 2018. Mm-hmm. Before the pandemic, I took a couple guys who had never gone to a con, and it was literally like, there's a booth of like root beer, there's a person selling underwear and socks, there's cosplayers everywhere, there's t-shirt, you know, there's like, where's the comics? Like, I didn't even see, like, Brandon Routh was there, and like all these, I didn't even see the celebrities. And I had a ton of money, so I went to like a trade paperback booth where all the trades are $2, and I just remember they had to give me like a box. It was just like ridiculous. And do I own any of those things? No, because I've like gotten rid of like all of my collections of like everything. So like my little shrine, I sent you a picture of my Star
Trek. Yeah, of your Trek stuff. Yeah.
Like I buy like PJ Woodhouse books if I find them, and I buy Star Trek books that I may or may not keep and might just bring back. But if I, you know, I've seen collections of like, there's like 800 or 900
there's
of these
almost
books.
900 Star Trek
I've
books.
Seen
yeah.
People in groups that I've belonged to, literary Trek groups with 900 books. It's like, there's been more stuff written in those than in the movies and TVs and everything combined.
Yeah, and I don't know that I want to, but it would be fun. I mean, it would be fun to try to do, you know, but it's like, this is the thing as we're coming to the end of our hour. The thing I would say about Star Trek is I'm pleased. Like I'm happy to grow. Like I was never a Star Wars fan or a person who's like Star Trek. I would never thought saying you're a Trekkie was a put down. It's just like you, that was the thing you were. I didn't get it until later.
But,
and again,
no, but you weren't never like, I'm a fan of this. You were just like, that's fucking cool. Like that's basically like,
right.
Like, check this out. Like there were things you were definitely, well, no, I will take Dick Grayson, like,
right,
you're like the biggest Dick Grayson fan I know, because like he and like Hal Jordan, like there's certain things you're like, yeah, I'm a fan of that. I might not ever read it again until I die, but I can say I'm a fan of that and that particular thing.
Correct.
You know,
and that's okay.
The thing is like, you don't have to continue to
prove
can just
your
like,
exactly.
You can just like Strange New Worlds and you're just as valid a fan as somebody who likes Trouble with Tribbles. And that's the only thing that they like, that's the thing. There's no measurement of it.
Right.
You know, it's
you're not supposed to because it was entertainment for the people. If you missed an episode, because I mean the original Star Trek, when I was watching it in order, I was checking in with the Trekkies I knew. I'm like, what's up with these fucking star dates? Like, because TNG.
Oh, they mean nothing. They mean nothing.
Well, that's the thing. But in TNG and DSN, which I knew a little bit better, I was like, those dates are in order. The original series of Star Trek.
It meant nothing. I didn't
they
know
They meant nothing. Like, I didn't know that. I'm like, wait, when is this? Because I'm watching. It's like Stardate 4000, whatever. I'm like, okay. And then the next one is like Stardate 2000. I'm like, wait. What is happening? And then
I
like,
used to love the minutia, Jerry. The minutia. The Seinfeld. No, I used to love it. I used to have the only DC comic I owned was like... Well, was the who's who of Star Trek. And it went,
nice.
It was like one shot that just went through all these, you know, as a who's who entry. So you got all the first appearances and all the history and stuff. You know, I remember just getting books like James Blish, the adaptation books from the library of Star Trek or trying to write my own Star Trek stories when I was a kid. Like it has that kind of spark to it, but it doesn't, you know, you don't have to wear a uniform. You could just be like, well, I like it in my I always say I like it in my own way, you know.
Right.
It's like my wife loves Harry Potter, has a tattoo of it, you know. We've got a little bit of Harry Potter stuff around, but she likes it in her own way. When we went to Universal, we went to the embodiment of Potter, you know. We're walking down Diagon, there's whole families dressed in full costume, you know.
No, I know,
in
I've
Florida,
stayed in that hotel,
like,
across the street one time. And I didn't go into, because, you know, I hate amusement parks, but I was in that hotel. And every night, every day at breakfast, kids, it was the coolest thing to see. I'm like, you go. That was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, you don't have to be that. You don't have to go to the
you don't have
ceremony.
To. Exactly.
You can
and
like
you
it in your own way.
I agree.
And that's the
and
coolest
I think,
thing about these fandoms, too, is that you can be just into the Klingons. You can just, oh, I like the synths and Data. I like Picard. I like... You know, it's like a 31 flavors, you know, you have a flavor of, oh, I like this person. Like I said, I like Kira I like a lot of the other characters. I like Quark and Odo and all those other guys in Deep Space Nine. And Avery, you know, he's always going to be Hawk to me a little bit because he was on Spencer Fryer.
He was Hawk. I know. But and God, he's so
apparently great. He's lost his fucking mind and doesn't even do public appearances. And if you watch, there's The Captains, I think it's called.
Which I didn't see. I've heard it's great. It's great. He's not in it.
Right. He's in it. And he's okay. Like he on the piano talking about jazz and stuff. He's a very eccentric guy, you know. But Sirach, who played Jake, said he treated me like his kid. He took me to the Lakers game. He introduced him as his son. And he directed a whole bunch of those. So there's, again, it's like I was going to write a book about Tolkien at one time and call it Tolkien's Well. I don't know if I ever told you about this concept, but it was like, it's like you can always draw from it. You can keep drawing from Star Trek and go, well, I need Star Trek. You know, like I say, if I compare Star Wars to Star Trek, it hasn't disappointed me. But to say one's better or not, that's the thing, is that it was Clone Wars and Ahsoka, that character that, you know, changed Star Wars for me, because he should have waited on episode 3. He should have shot it, waited for it, and then, you know, released it. But again, I'm going into Star Wars territory. What I'm saying is that you literally will get the gaps filled in there.
Yeah.
And when you see Star Trek and you have like the Voyager crew goes back to the original series episode of The Trouble with Tribbles in one of their episodes, and then that's what the books are. The books are like, oh, well, this is a story about this, and you know, Bucks-Wana and Q, they're hooking up. Like, it's fun and it's great and it feels like an episode, but at the end of the day, does it matter? No.
No.
It matters to me and it's in my head canon. But that's the thing, is like, if you just like Strange New Worlds and say, fuck, I don't want to take the time or I don't want to pay for this shit, then I understand that, because we're getting to the point of where everything's under a paywall. You can't even games like the new Star Wars games coming out. And it's like, well, you can do a Jabba the Hutt adventure if you pay for a pricier version of it. And, you know, I'm a big gamer and I'm like, well, thanks. Thank you very much. You know, it's like, but then I play something like Jedi Survivor and it talks about the High Republic and the different eras. Or I play the Star Trek video game or online game and it's literally my own crew and my own ship. And we do these little missions that are kind of like filling in the canon. So it's just whatever, you know, it can be a well, you know, so maybe sometimes the well gets a little poisoned, like my superhero well, but at the end of the day, it's like, fuck, I had a bad day. I love about speculative fiction, whether it's whatever form it's in, is like, I could have a really shitty day. I'm like, and I can turn on Star Trek and it's like, it's going to, even the shittiest episode is going to deliver that escapism. It's going to be like, okay, wow, they have the Dominion are attacking the Borg are here, you know, blah 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 blah, you know, like people having in these positions of power and being under these conflicts and being under the stress, it almost like takes away my stress, you know. It's like we used to say about the Smiths and Morrissey, like I like it because he knows what it's like to be depressed. So he understands it. That's the level that your connection to Morrissey, and that's not the stuff to
these
days. We'll
get there. They're on the list. We'll get Morrissey and the Smiths on the list. Don't worry.
That's the thing about Star Trek, is I can sit down, I can watch these people in power. You know,
yeah.
Like David Weber's got the Honor Harrington series, which is a really good military science fiction story. And I remember at one of my jobs, you know, years ago, being, you know, it's kind of that way now, but having, and we talked about this before we started recording, about how people in power are just like, what the hell, like we have to bow to these people in power.
I know.
And reading Honor Harrington in this science fiction speculative story, her first officer fucking wants her job, so he's not helping her out, and she's like, well, if they don't respect me, then they're gonna fear me. And then you can see the same thing in this, you know, kind of wishy-washy military that the Starfleet has. But again, it can be a battle between Starfleet and, you know, the biggest problem in Trek, to me, the new Trek, is that Starfleet is always evil. It's the Green Lantern Guardians
scenario. Sure, I get it. Yeah.
Once Geoff Johns said, oh, the Guardians are all evil, then fuck, man, you might as well leave. And he did shortly after. But it's like, once you start saying Starfleet is is the pit of all, you know, the root of all of our shit, then you didn't have that Next Gen, because the Romulans, the biggest impact of things that happen on these shows, the Romulans go across the neutral zone, and you have this war that starts brewing in season one or two of Next Gen, and it just keeps going from there. And it's like, oh, we're going to have another war. It's going to happen with the Romulans. But then Spock comes along and says, no, I'm going to be the peacemaker here. So that's the thing. It's like, it's just one of these things that you can draw from throughout your life now that you're a fan and go, oh, okay, look at all this. There's just all this stuff here, you know, and if more of it hits than doesn't, then it's something you're never going to forget, you know?
I agree. That's well said. We're going to end right there because that's perfect. That was a beautiful ending. So, everybody, we're going to roll the magic 20-sided die to find out what's next.
Wait, hold on. What do you have a favorite Star Trek thing before we leave? Like, what's your favorite?
Oh, Deep Space Nine, all day long. My favorite episode of Deep Space Nine, my favorite of Star Trek. I mean, obviously, I love the new musical episode. I loved that, but. And I actually, it's funny, when I saw it the most recently, I was laying on the couch. I was sick. I was watching it on Heroes and Icons for free, just sitting there watching it. So I was like in and out of a dream spit. You know, yeah. How I love Kafka. There is a version of The Trial where O'Brien is on trial, and it is a retelling of Kafka's The Trial on Deep Space Nine. And I honestly thought I was hallucinating it when I was watching it. I was like, holy shit, is Deep Space Nine doing a version? And I like later when I was better, I had to look it up. And then I've watched it again since. And I was like, thank you for that. Thank you. That is the most Trekkian thing to do, a Kafka episode. And of course, I love O'Brien. I mean, Deep Space Nine is great. I mean, Sisko's the boss, right? I mean, it's so good. It's just such a great show because it's so character driven. And all of them are, but like, that is the one because they're, and I know like on a spaceship, you're cramped, but there's something about Deep Space Nine, which is technically bigger than the ships. It feels more cramped. I don't know what it is. I love it. So anyway,
I think for me, it's about, I could probably pick 100 different things.
Yeah.
But I'll say right now, it's probably the musical episode.
That was genius, right? I bought the soundtrack.
Because what it does is it pisses off all the old school Trek fans, and it has a conversation. It starts conversations, which Star Trek is supposed to do. So it's like the most Star Trek thing because it basically said, we're not going to do a very non-Star Trek thing. But at the same time, we're getting people to talk about it. So
yeah.
I just like the kind of FU bit about that.
I agree.
That.
Couldn't agree more.
All right.
I thought it was
so
great.
I'm ready to roll. Do you have the list?
I do.
I rolled a 3.
And 3 is, controversy. James Gunn.
Oh, I was hoping for this. I was thinking about James Gunn.
Well,
there's a lot of news about the new Superman movie. So
yeah.
Your stance is you don't like James Gunn, right?
Yep, that is my stance.
All right. We're going to have fun.
I mean, yes, well, we'll save it for next week, next time. Okay, so.
You might be right. I don't know.
We'll talk about it. I mean, that's what the point of the show is, Heath and Tony talk about. Next time, Heath and Tony talk about James Gunn. So, thank you, my friend. We'll have to, off air, we'll do some admin because I've got some traveling to do. So, we'll figure that out. And as I said, on May the 4th, I will actually be in Michigan at my college's graduation. So that is a very good day for them. Thank you for trekking me. Thank you. If you are a Trek fan, let us know at AR Farina at HB_Fedora. And did you know, Bradley, that on October 2nd, we have a book out?
We have a book coming out.
There's
Holy
a link
shit.
In the show notes to pre-order the book. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just put it in our show notes and see if anybody clicks on it. So if you go to the show notes, you can either pre-order the book and there's a link to a book sprout. It's totally free. You can get a free advanced reader copy of the book. And all we ask in exchange is that you leave us a review either on Goodreads or Amazon and on Booksprout because that's part of the deal. So it's free. You can get a copy of the book now and you can decide if it's good. Brett, have you looked at the book? Have you seen the image that they put for your essay? It's so awesome.
I haven't yet.
Holy shit. You should look.
Okay. Yeah, it's very cool.
Cool. So we have a book out. We have a collection of essays. It's called Comics Lit Volume 1, meaning Volume 2 is, and today I'm going to announce it to the world. Eric Grissom, comic writer Eric Grissom, who wrote Goblin, who wrote Gregory Suicide, he is going to write our foreword.
Nice.
Confirmed. So anyway, Heath and I have a book. Dude, we're in a book together.
I know.
Us.
Pretty awesome.
Isn't that the most amazing thing ever?
It's a comedy.
It happened. I'm so happy for us. So click on those show notes, people. Support independent art. See everybody later. Bye.
Bye.
Shut up.